This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The murder of Medgar Evers was a signal event in the civil rights movement. He was an organizer for the NAACP, working to register black voters in Mississippi when he was killed in his driveway in 1963. He was shot in the back by a white man who got away with it for 30 years. Medgar Evers' assassination was a spark that motivated social activists and inspired writers, poets, and journalists. And though we still remember his name, too many of us have forgotten the work he died for. In her new book, Minrose Gwynn engages the body of work that emerged in response to Medgar Evers' life and death. She hopes to preserve and illuminate the memory of one of the most important civil rights leaders in American history. Minrose Gwynn is a professor of English at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her new book is called Remembering Medgar Evers. Minrose Gwynn, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Why did you decide to write this book about Medgar Evers now?
Well, I'm a Mississippian, and so this is my history, too. And also, I was starting to work on a much larger project, one about how art helps us to remember as a culture. And I thought, well, one chapter of this will be the chapter, a chapter on Medgar Evers, because there's so much interesting literature and song about him. And so I started writing this, and all of a sudden I realized this is enough for a whole book. And this is a man who needs to be remembered more than he has been in our contemporary age. So I just went ahead with it.
And you yourself wrote a novel, which was a kind of a memoir and novel that in many ways revolved around the assassination of Medgar Evers.
Yes, and it was an interesting process because I was in the middle of writing and doing research on the Medgar Evers book, so I was very deeply into the archival material in Mississippi, and I all of a sudden I thought I've just got to write this novel, and so I stopped the Medgar Evers project in the middle of it and wrote the novel. And then started the Medgar Evers Project up. And in the novel, the death of Medgar Evers is a real pivot point in the narrative. And there's a scene in it in which a young African-American woman of college age is trying to explain to a young white girl what Medgar Evers means to her people. And so it's a very pivotal kind of scene right. In the book.
And your decision to look at the artistic renderings and rememberings of Medgar Evers, I think, was genius in the way that you brought together some writers who lived together. I mean, here's Margaret Walker, 3.5 miles from Eudora Welty in the same Jackson, Mississippi, where Medgar Evers worked and died. And you talk about their writing, their outpouring in the immediate aftermath. And I wasn't even aware of the fact that Eudora Welty had written a short story in the first person in the voice of the killer that was published in The New Yorker less than a month after Medgar Evers was killed.
Yes. When she heard the news of his death, she sat down at her manual typewriter and just started working on this story. And it's just very, very troubling and interesting story in that she's writing from the voice of the killer. And it was an interesting story also because The New Yorker published this. Medgar Evers was killed on June the 13th, and the story was published on July the 6th. Mm. So you have a very quick turnaround point. And she had to do some major editing over the telephone with her editor at The New Yorker because when Byron Della Beckwith, the killer, was arrested, the likeness was so much, so similar, and many of the instances in the story were so similar to the real story that she had to make some changes to avoid legal problems.
And then tell us about Margaret Walker, her poetry. She, in fact, was not in Jackson. She lived there, but wasn't in the city when the killing took place. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. And she was actually at the University of Iowa getting a PhD in English. and writing a dissertation that was a novel. And the night that he was killed, or the next day that he was killed, her young son was on television. She was watching TV, and her young son was on television because her family lived right down the street, and her children were living there with her husband. And he said on TV, the blood is all over the place. And she was just horrified by this and sat down and wrote a really incredible poem called Micah, in which she likens Medgar Evers to the vociferous Old Testament prophet Micah. And it became part of a small collection of poems called Prophets for a New Day.
Just amazing that these two talented writers living just a few miles apart in the city where Medgar Evers was killed would, of course, immediately be affected. And one, the black writer, talk about Medgar Evers and about him. And then Eudora Welty, able to capture the voice of the killer within a week or so of his death. Fascinating in the sense that, you know, you have a section of Eudora Welty's. You also have the poem in your book. What struck me in Eudora Welty's story was the intimacy of this man who the killer had killed. I knowed him when he cut the car lights off and put his foot out. I knowed him standing in the dark against the light. I knowed him then like I know me now. That blend of intimacy that black and white knew in the South, and yet the projection of all of his anxieties on the other, on the hated other, all reflected in this two-page artistic rendition of the death of Medgar Evers.
Yes, it's a very chilling story because the reader is forced to get inside that psyche, the psyche of racism, and to examine it. And it's interesting, one of the things I found out as I was working on this project is that many of the contemporary writers that I've worked with revoice these kinds of issues and things. For example, there's a wonderful writer. He's the Kentucky Poet Laureate now, just was named the Kentucky Poet Laureate, Frank X. Walker. And he has a new book called Turn Me Loose, which were Evers's last words. And the subtitle is The Unghosting of Medgar Evers. And he, in his poems in this book, it's a collection of 49 poems, gets inside the voice of Byron Della Beckwith in ways that are very similar to what Welty did 50 years ago. So it's very interesting to see these writers try to grapple with this psyche of racism.
And the
that
way
killed Medgar Evers.
That killed Medgar Evers. And so, I mean, in part, mm-hmm. we always, you see Della Beckwith, Byron Della Beckwith, always characterized as a white supremacist. And the danger there, it seems to me, is that you create this subset of the human population, and even of the Southern population that was on the fringe. And yet he did this with the full, first of all, the racist organizations he was part of were insinuated into every part of normal life in Mississippi. So that's the first thing you have to know. And then beyond that, the fact that he did this with the complicity of the town and the region in which he worked. He was tried twice and there were hung juries in both cases. And so that's part of what you see and have talked about in your reflections in the way artists, writers, and musicians have seen and remembered Medgar Evers' life. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and when he was, of course, he was finally convicted in 1994, but in 1964, when he had the two trials, and both of them were hung juries. Actually, people were quite surprised that he got a hung jury, that right. he didn't get just a direct acquittal, because, of course, juries back then were all white men, who many of whom were sympathetic to his what he was doing. But Welty made one mistake about him in her story, and this worried her throughout the rest of her career. She characterized him as a lower class man, right. who was very open about his racism, and actually he was of a very well off at one point, and, well, a prominent Greenwood, Mississippi family. So he was really more of the class of Eudora Welty herself, could have been one of her neighbors, rather than much closer to her experience than she created him as in the story. I think is interesting, which proves your point, I think.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, certainly the way she was able to capture that voice and render it so accurately to the point that her editors were concerned about a libel suit. But talk more about this, because the more recent book, The Unghosting of Medgar Evers, is a reference to Ghost of Mississippi, the film, the book and the film that talks about that trial in 1994 in which Della Beckwith was indeed convicted, finally, more than 30 years after the murder. But there you talk about a reflection of sort of the white liberal community and the way it chooses to remember the story about the heroic white people in 94 who finally achieved justice.
Yeah, I think the director of the film, Rob Reiner, really had very good intentions when he produced the film and directed it. But what came across in that film, as in another film of the same period, Mississippi Burning, which was about the three civil rights workers' deaths in Philadelphia, Mississippi. But the young DA, assistant DA, comes off as the hero, and the FBI in Mississippi Burning, the white guys in Mississippi Burning come off as the heroes of this story. And really, we don't learn very much in the story about Medgar Evers himself or what he stood for or anything of that sort. So, or the heroic efforts of Merle Evers Williams to bring her husband's killer to justice. She was the one who really insisted on that third trial. So the emphasis in these films is unusual in the sense that it doesn't really clearly depict the real reality of the situation.
And this is part of your concern, I understand, in writing this book, is that we may all know the name Medgar Evers. We may even know that he was killed as part of within the civil rights movement. But we're not clear about exactly what it is he achieved and the circumstances under which he had to work.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk a little bit about him as a leader and a person. He was an exceptional leader in the sense that, you know, when we think of civil rights leaders, we think of people who make very powerful speeches that motivate, and we think of leaders who are out there leading marches heroically, and certainly Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is the prime example of such a leader. And there were leaders, of course, like that in the civil rights movement. But there were also other kinds of leaders, and Medgar Evers was a leader who was a witness. He was a storyteller and he was a reporter. What he would do was often well under the radar. He would go down into the Delta land of Mississippi or deep into central Mississippi in the rural areas, and he'd go in disguise, wearing workers' overalls and shoes and so forth, and he would record people's stories about violence, murder, mayhem, threats, and so forth. And then he would bring in reporters from outside of Mississippi. The press in Mississippi was, with very few exceptions, was very much in the pocket of the racist white supremacist establishment. And so he would bring in reporters from, say, places like New Orleans, Memphis, New York Times, and so forth, and he would say, look at this, look at this, look at what is being done to my people here. And so he worked often very much under the radar, and there are lots of pictures of him talking to people and taking notes. He kept this little notebook in his pocket, and he would take notes about and tell the stories And he was, people don't think of him in connection with the Emmett Till case, the very famous Emmett Till case of the 14-year-old youth who was lynched, which is one of the most, in 1955. And Evarts was very young then. He had just taken on the field secretary position for the NAACP. But he went down to Money, Mississippi, where Till's body was, and he examined the body. He took photographs of the mutilated body, and he brought in the reporters and made his reports to the National Office of the NAACP. And it's said by several people who worked with him on that that the Emmett Till case would never have been known the way it is now, you know, or then, without Medgar Evarts. So that's the kind of leader he was. He was a leader who worked under the radar.
And he had to know how dangerous it was. If he is reporting on unreported murders and then talking about it to outside agitators, he had to know how that would end up. What was the most... You did a lot of research, I know, and you went through a lot of the archives, things that really hadn't come to light until now. What for you was the most moving story?
For me, the most moving story was the story of the widow and children of Clinton Melton. And Evarts actually writes about them in a report in also in 1955. And Clinton Melton was a young man who was killed for putting too much gas in a white man's car. The white man just took out a gun and blew him away. This was in the town of Glendora, Mississippi. And he was a World War II veteran, like Evarts himself, and the father of four small children, ages 5 months to 5 years. And so there's a report, a very long report, that Evarts does in which he lists all the children's names, all their ages. And he ends this report with a statement, the experience shall be of long memory. And I thought that really summed up the way that Evarts operated in terms of trying to make people remember these people, these unsung heroes and heroines of the civil rights movement, or are just hapless victims who had been in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's interesting that Clinton Melton's widow, very young woman, actually had a terrible accident shortly thereafter, and her car ran off the road into a body of water, and she died. And he went back down and investigated that also, Evarts did.
You talked about his widow, Medgar Evarts' widow, Murley, who was instrumental in getting the conviction of Della Beckwith, and also spoke recently at President Obama's inauguration.
Yes.
Let's listen to that.
150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation and 50 years after the March on Washington, we celebrate the spirit of our ancestors, which has allowed us to move from a nation of unborn hopes and a history of disenfranchised votes to today's expression of a more perfect union.
CNN clip of Murley Evarts speaking at President Barack Obama's inauguration. I've only got about 20 seconds left, Monroes, but certainly Medgar Evarts takes part of the responsibility for that. Are we remembering him correctly? Are we remembering him for the right things?
I think that we need to learn more about Medgar Evarts and what he did in the civil rights movement. Murley Evarts Williams herself says that she spent her whole life trying to get Medgar Evarts his rightful place in history. And I think as we approach the 50th anniversary of his death, that we should be thinking about him in new sorts of ways.
Monroes, great book. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.
Monroes Gwynn, professor of English at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her new book is called Remembering Medgar Evarts. It's out to the coast coming up. Stay tuned.